Alright, I'm gonna snap. Well, that kind of, I'm not gonna snap, I'm gonna, you know. Alright, so there are four of us and we're walking in the canal all in unison. It's to the same beat, to the same snappy beat. I am John Jack Mangan. I am sitting here live in studio with John Desert Pixie. And then, of course, across the magic of the internet, or across the eighth dimension, I guess, I'm talking to John Tony Mast and John J.R. Murdoch. Thank you guys for all coming together to talk about Buckaroo the Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension.
Yay!
Woo!
Thanks for having us.
Yes, and that's all I really have left to say about this movie, actually. I've been talking about it a lot lately.
That's it, we're done.
I think I heard someone crying.
Although, actually, to mark, you know, my true appreciation for this movie and its era, I'm going to break dance on the floor right now.
Oh, hot dang.
Because I think that
are you
is...
wearing your parachute pants?
Yeah. I think that is the only thing that could have made that movie more 80s is you know, a breakdance competition, you know, with Mr. T at the very end.
Or yeah. Jean-Claude Van Damme in there somewhere.
Right. But, you know, it is a beloved movie. You know, I have great memories of watching the movie and great memories of wherever you go, there you are, of course. And, you know, the big boo Tay was, of course, a running joke with me and my geekier teenage friends. But, you know, I don't know. Let me get your guys. Tiffany actually, Desert Pixie actually saw it for the very first time a few days ago, and I'll let her give her reaction. But I want to get your guys' memories and reactions and, you know, your love or hate or indifference or whatever to the movie.
I remember the first time I watched this movie was on HBO. It had come and gone to the theaters. It was probably 85 when I watched it on HBO. Might have been late 84. And I just remember sitting there watching it going, I can't even begin to absorb what I saw. And of course, being on HBO, that meant it was on at least 17 times a day. And I probably watched it 17 times a day just trying to figure out what it was I was watching, but knowing that I was enjoying it and going, this is filled with so much awesome, I have to watch it again. And I watched it so many times in the 80s that I don't think I watched it again until, as we were talking before, right before the voting came out. And it just was coincidental that I'd watched it again because I had wanted to see it again. I just loved the movie, and I just wanted to see what was it that I loved about it as a teen that I still love now. And I threw it in, watched it, and I'm like, you know, come on. It's Buckaroo Banzai. He's the, what was it, the physicist, neurosurgeon,
rock star.
Yeah, rock star. I mean, he was everything. I mean, he was basically the person everyone aspired to be. And it was like, this is like the dream person anybody would want to be. And he just went above and beyond to be the ultimate hero you could possibly imagine. And it was just so much fun to watch and just to see how everything played out.
Yeah, and actually that's what I remember. I will jump in and say, you know, that's what I remember. That was my reaction seeing it the first time, right, being blown away with all the cool stuff he was and that he did. And, of course, when I watched it then, it didn't feel that dated, you know. And I'll say even on a contemporary watch, that opening is just fantastic, everything that happens. You know, the test drive and everything and all the quirky characters are already letting their personality shine through.
Oh, yeah, it starts right off with the test drive. I mean, it's not like you're building up in anything. It's like, okay, let's go, and bam, he's off in his car. It's like, wait, who are these people? you don't get a chance to get to know them. It's just everything's happening now.
Right, he's already world famous. It's already an established universe. All I will say, and then I'm going to let you guys take over again, is that I'm totally riveted. I'm really there, and I really do like the movie. I'm not just trashing it just because... just to be contrary, but man, I'm so there, and then the music scene starts in the club, and then I'm just going, what is happening? It's like Huey Lewis and the News Rejects. It hurts. That whole scene.
Wasn't there in the guitar?
Oh,
yes.
The guitar.
Yeah. There's a key, and then he whips out the little tiny bugle. There's like a bugle solo. It's oh my god. Anyway, I'm zipping it. So go on.
Hello. This is T. Morris. You're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. Yay.
Well,
it's so easy to ramble about this movie once you get going.
Yeah, you know, I kind of have the same experience with watching this movie for the first time as JR, because I lived on a military base, and we got movies, you know, if we were lucky, like 6 months after they were in the theater. So quite often we wouldn't, you know, we would be seeing movies hit HBO at about the same time we'd get them at the base theater. So I'm sure my first time watching it was probably on HBO, because I can't imagine we would have seen this on base. It's just, I don't think it would have risen to that level of actually being shown there.
Plenty of people would have said no.
Yeah, yeah. Then
let's get a real movie like Porky's.
There are a handful of movies that kind of fit in my mind that are kind of all together. And not thematically, but just by the fact that they were on in the summer when we had HBO, and they were on like 17 times a day. Every other day, because they didn't show them consecutive days. And it was like this, and Krull, and Megaforce, and the Philadelphia Experiment. Was that the one?
All the different Friday the 13th.
Oh, the
movies.
Final Countdown. Yeah.
Beastmaster was another one.
Beastmaster, yeah. Oh, yeah. Beastmaster was another one. And they all have that same kind of low budget, cheesy, but man, when you're at that age, it just all works, and it's all magical, and it's all very cool. And I was watching the movie a couple weeks ago after the Palooza had been decided, and I was watching it again and thinking, you know what? This movie, if it were made today, would totally be one of those Nickelodeon movies. It would be full of like 16-year-olds, but it would be the exact same movie. It would be exactly the same as this.
Yeah, they would have Big Time Rush in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It would be the same kind of thing. They'd have their musical bit because they're trying to sell some song or some album, and they would, you know, they would all be these Mary Sue kind of characters. But I don't think it would have. I think they would have they'd play it more tongue in cheek than this was, because this isn't serious, but they played it serious, and I think that's what's cool about it.
Yeah, it's got the subtle humor where it's the characters take it so seriously and play it so intently, yet when you're watching it, you're going, "This is so ridiculous! It's hilarious."
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you could say the same thing about Flash. I mean, Flash Gordon,
yep,
which is another Palooza movie. But I think this is a far superior movie, actually. I mean, history would probably favor Flash Gordon over this. But for me, this is a better movie than Flash Gordon.
Oh, and I feel it was a much better movie. I almost feel that the Flash Gordon movie, yeah, they had a little tongue-in-cheek. But I think that they were taking it more serious because they had a lot more history behind Flash Gordon than they did with Buckaroo Banzai. Buckaroo Banzai, wasn't it a graphic novel or a comic for a while?
That was afterward.
Or was it after?
It was after.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was an original piece of fiction. Unless you figure that this is actually like a Neo Doc Savage story.
Thank you for bringing that up. Yes, please elaborate on that too, because we haven't touched on that. And everyone I talk to about this, they always bring up the Doc Savage thing.
Yeah, and I mean, Doc Savage is this kind of character. He's a super awesome smarty guy, and he's filled in the action science universe, you know, and like I can see Doc Savage, Buckaroo Banzai, and Atomic Robo, if you're familiar with that at all, like living in the same universe and like interacting at different points in time. They live in that action science universe where the rock stars, the cool people, are the scientists, and the guys that go out and do like Atomic Robo calls it action science. And that's the way Buckaroo Banzai starts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now that you throw the Doc Savage in there, yeah, that's very true, because Doc Savage was stronger than the strong man on the team, smarter than the smart man on the team, and more daring than everybody else on the team. And, yeah, I can see that with Buckaroo Banzai, because he had a little bit of all the characters in him, but he was just a little bit better than every one of them.
Right, right. Where modern sensibility and storytelling, you'd have your lead character being just a half a step down from each of them. He could fill in any of those roles, but not be the best.
Right.
Where Buckaroo Banzai and Doc Savage was, you have Perfect Tommy. But if you have a character who's perfect, you still have a character who's better than him. Buckaroo Banzai is still better than the character that, by his name and by every right of what everyone says about him, the character is perfect. But you still have somebody better than him.
That's right.
Yeah, that is a little ironic take. Yeah, that's a good ironic point, that you had Perfect Tommy, but then you had this guy who was, by all accounts, really, really was perfect.
Right.
And from New Jersey.
Is anything from New Jersey?
Yay.
Hello. Just letting you know that all of us Pixies listen to Jack Mangan's Deadpan.
That's right. All of the Pixies love Jack Mangan, and Deadpan is the Pixie listening way.
Hello?
Hello.
And that was when I fell out of the chair. I'm on Wikipedia. I didn't realize that half the people in this movie are dead. I didn't realize Vincent Schiavelli had died.
Yeah. Yeah, I know he'd died.
He was not old either.
Yeah. It was strange that kind of human.
Yeah, he was great as Electoid. He was perfect. Him and Christopher Lloyd made perfect Electoids.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
It was almost like they were bred for the part.
Yes. It's very juvenile of me, but of all the funny parts of the movie, the one that kind of makes me laugh the most is when he gives Lizardo the finger. That's just so unexpected and out of the blue and just hilarious.
All right, so I don't think we've heard from Pixie yet.
She's sitting there being quiet and avoiding us.
Yeah.
No, I'm listening and taking in all your fine commentary.
Well, she might have
notes. She's taking notes to trash us all.
Yeah, she's like, man, these guys are a bunch of huge nerds. Wow.
Hey, ixnay on the erds nay. I'm trying to impress this chick here. She might have a different take on the movie than.
No, see, Jack.
Is she still sitting on the couch next to you? I think you've already impressed her.
we're trying to out nerd you, Jack. We're trying to soften the blow.
No, it's all good.
All right.
There's not a thing as too nerdy for me. Not at all.
Oh, have you been to a con?
Yes. I have, actually.
Okay.
I did go to a con.
Yeah. She said, well, there are two hilarious stories. One thing, what did you say? You said, I can't take all the antisocial behavior or the awkward social behavior.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot of awkward social behavior that I'm not used to.
And of course, my daughter had the best line of the weekend. She said, on the way back to the con for the day two, she said, the people at these conventions we go to really need to brush their teeth better.
Oh, my gosh. Ouch.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, life would be so much better if everybody followed the 3-2-1 rule of con going.
Yeah, I was going to say, Murr came out with the rules a long time ago about 3-2-1, and that's, you got to stick by it.
Yep.
I don't remember the 3-2-1.
It's 3 hours of sleep, 2 meals, 1 shower.
Every day.
And that's a rule, and that's a minimum.
Yeah, for each con day, that's your minimum you have to do.
Oh, do they not sleep well at the cons? People don't sleep?
Some of them don't sleep at all. Some of them, find them crashed out on the floor or in the con. Because they go on 24 hours, and they're con suites and everything. So some of them just don't stop.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I did get to experience a con suite, right?
Yeah, but, we did it was a really modest, very small con. There were no parties. It was just very, very quiet. Mm-hmm. None of this Archon debauchery.
Oh, yeah, that's coming up real soon.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I throw a room party that, like last year, Archon throws a room, like a huge party every year. It's a dual con, and most people will deny that it's two cons. It's really two cons. Like during the day, it's your typical literary sci-fi con. Like, you know, there's, you know, people going to panels, there's gaming, you know, just rampant nerdery. Then at night, it's a party con. There's room parties. There's, you know, part of your con admission gets you free beer, and people take advantage of that. The like last year, the hotel shut things down at like 2 o'clock. So after 2 o'clock, it was only the room parties that were available. So we had a room party. So that's when everybody came to ours, and like we had people coming to our room party donating money for drinks, as opposed to getting the free beer from the con because our party was more fun.
Nice.
You were like the bachelor, Tom Hanks bachelor party of the con.
In more ways than one.
Yeah.
Yeah. The room party that we throw every year is Sausage Fest for Breast Cancer Awareness.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And it's
brilliant.
Like our slogan is, and this is probably where you're going to go have to put the explicit tag on. It's putting our meat where the pink is.
Nice.
So the Sausage Fest logo, the A in Sausage Fest is the awareness ribbon, but it's being penetrated by sausage. Yeah, it's we have a great time, and we've raised a lot of money, and we're doing it again this year. It's actually
actually raising money for something.
Yes, yeah, we are actually we take donations and we raise money, and this year our the charity that we're donating to is the Breast Cancer Research Foundation. So, yeah, it's, you know, Archon always happens during October. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And we wanted one more reason to have a persistent room party. So this was as good as any.
And I'll say right now that I think it's wonderful that you're donating that to cancer research versus donating to the Susan G. Komen Foundation.
The first two years we did donate to Komen, and they were a nightmare to work with.
Well, and then you also read all their literature and realize that 75% of your proceeds go to Susan G. Komen Foundation,
right?
Not to cancer research.
Yeah, BCRF. It's 91 cents of every dollar that's donated to them goes to research and awareness.
Right, and the rest goes, and that's why I've told a lot of people, because they, you know, oh, we're going to do the walk for Susan G. Komen and this and that, and I tell them, I said, you realize that out of every million they make, 750,000 goes to them.
Yep.
And when you put it in those terms, then people open their eyes and go, wait a second. And that 250,000 really doesn't go to even research on cancer. It goes to other things that aren't Susan G. Komen.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's plus they're just really tough to work with.
I've heard that.
They don't want to be associated with you if you don't jump through all their hoops and go through their committees. And they very clearly state, don't put anything about us on your literature unless you, like, basically go through committee.
Right, and you have signed written consent that you can do that.
Fortunately, I had an IP attorney in my back pocket, and he said, no, you go ahead and put whatever you want. I'll take care of it.
There you go.
Nice. So,
yeah, because they will come after you and try and sue you.
Yeah, they will.
Also had they had a scandal, like, in the past year or two, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. Well,
they had a couple different scandals. One of them was trying to sue somebody over the phrase, for the cause.
For the
cure.
It's for the cure, because that's their trademark.
Right, but they had never actually trademarked it. So somebody had used it on something else for a promotion for Susan G. Komen, and they turned around and sued the people that were having the fundraiser for Susan G. Komen.
Mm-hmm.
And the people eventually came back and said, you know what, we're not giving you any of this money. We're going to give it to another cancer research fund.
Yeah, and the great thing is, like the one that the Breast Cancer Research Foundation, on their website, they very clearly say, you know, hey, if you want to use our name, just please use it the right way.
Yeah, don't be offensive or, you know, defame it.
Yeah, here's our name. Just make sure you use the registered trademark symbol after it.
Right.
It's really, man, it's so much a better an organization to work with. I contacted them, said, hey, you know, I want to do this. And they said, great, give us your address. We'll send you some ribbons. They sent me ribbons, pamphlets, and wristbands.
Yep. They're from what I've heard, they're great.
Yeah, they're really cool. And even if you don't donate to Sausage Fest or anything like that, the folks that are hearing this, donate to, especially during October, because it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, BCRFcure.org is their website. They're really awesome. They really are.
I was going to say, we'll put most of this in. So how does one donate to Sausage Fest?
You can go to sausagefeststl.com and all the information's there. We actually have some perks that you can get if you donate at certain levels. Last year I did an Indiegogo campaign. Can't do Kickstarter because you're donating. If you donate your money, you can't use Kickstarter, so you have to use Indiegogo. And it was great, but like 99% of the donations that I got were people that I know personally, or people that I know like through Facebook and Twitter well enough that I'd be comfortable giving them my home address and saying, just send me a check. Because between Indiegogo and PayPal, they took like 10%. And that's just the nature of the business.
They need to stay in business too.
Sure. And I don't begrudge them that. I knew that going in.
Yeah. Keeping 10% is one thing. Keeping 75% is a totally another.
Right. And you know what, for what we're doing, 10% is still $150 in what we took in last year from that campaign. So it's $150. Yeah. That would have been $150 we could have donated directly to the charity.
Right.
So I'm doing it all basically on my own. I set up my own site. I'm doing everything on my own from that. I still am using a PayPal link in case somebody wants to donate that way. But at the same time, I've got my email address out there, so you can just shoot me an email. I can get you my personal information if you want to mail a check or a money order or you know, cash, which is not normally suggestible. But and we've got some cool perks. We've got ale glasses, really nice etched ale glasses with the Sausage Fest logo, T-shirts, hoodies, wristbands. And then if you donate it at the like really big level, all of the flyers that go out at Archon, we put your logo on them. And that hits a couple of thousand geeks who see that this weekend. So
cool. And actually, when is Archon?
Archon is October. This year it's October 12th through the 14th. Normally it's the first weekend in October. There was some conflict, so they're doing it the second weekend this year. And specifically, Sausage Fest is October 13th at 10 p.m. We start the party at 10 o'clock.
Nice and early.
Yeah, last year the hotel closed us down at 3:30.
Oh, they let you guys go for a while.
Well, the hotel had a hard rule at 3, and we were actually closing it down at 3. And they let us, since they could see we were actively trying to push people out the door and say, sorry, we have to close now. And and there were people that wanted to wanted to stay. This year, actually, the hotel has lifted the curfew, so ooh, I'm not sure when we're going to be done.
I don't think you will be.
The first year, we actually ran out of alcohol, and that was when the party was done. We were tired. We were getting ready to close up, and somebody knocked at the door, like after we had already run out, and they had armfuls of booze, and they said, "We brought this from the car. We want the party to keep going. Can you take it to another room? Because we kind of want to sleep now."
You would have been here half an hour ago.
Yeah. Yeah. The first year, we saw things like Princess Leia and Wonder Woman making out. That was totally unplanned, but welcome. It actually helped with the donations quite a bit.
That kind of fits the theme, I guess, too.
It does. We had two gentlemen last year that came to the party, and they were very disappointed. They were dismayed that, you know, they saw a lot of lovely women walking around, and they wanted to know where the sausage was. These gentlemen were homosexual, but they felt really ripped off that this party was called Sausage Fest, and they didn't have anything that they could admire there, which, you know, that's a fair point.
But I guess they misinterpreted the name of the party, I guess.
Yeah, they were actually very cool. They gave a nice donation. They were having a good time, so.
That's cool. Everyone's encouraged to attend if you're anywhere near St. Louis.
Yeah, if you're near St. Louis, come on. You know, it's a great time. We have a lot of good stuff to drink, and we will have sausage. and last year, we threw everything into the crock pots at like 10 a.m. So everything was good, and you know the barbecue sauce, you could smell it, like, through about half the party floor of the con. And you know, the other nice thing is that, you know, if you guys have been to cons where there's parties at all, most of the time they're late, and there isn't like food. There's all kinds of alcohol to be found, but there's no food. So we had a lot of traffic just from people who just wanted something to eat.
Right, you're like scrounging like broken potato chips usually.
Exactly.
Fucking way is also acceptable. Sometimes liked.
Okay. Are we rolling?
Sure.
Okay. Hi, I'm Paul.
I'm Storm.
And you're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan.
Fucking.
And that is the way of things
that you're listening to.
Of Jack
Dead.
Yeah. Got it in one. Yeah. Boom.
That's why we do it.
So it's a sausage fest, both literally and figuratively.
Yes, yes.
That is awesome.
Yeah,
sausage
fest,
yes, for the melons.
Yep.
And circling all the way back around, how did we get there?
Yes. What is that watermelon doing there anyway?
Well, you know, Buckaroo Banzai and his crew, it's kind of a sausage fest. It really is.
Yeah, you know, and actually, as Desert Pixie pointed out after we watched, and actually, there's a spoiler. You know, she and I recorded something too, which you'll probably hear in a future episode. But she pointed out that Ellen Barkin, you know, as hot as she is in the movie, she's really just kind of there as the cheesecake. Mm-hmm. That's really what she's there for, and she makes lovely cheesecake. But
well, she's also there to be rescued,
right?
That's pretty much
very sensually.
Yes.
She wants to be rescued very, very sensually in the, you know, the classic 80s, 90s, like the little 90s that she wore were so 80s, 80s fashion. I mean, I remember the women in my family wearing those type of negligees and little two-piece silky pajamas, and I don't know that they really make those anymore in the current day and age.
And so they were wearing these during all the pillow fights, right?
Right. I don't need to envision my mom or my grandma like in pillow fights, but yes. I'm sure some other lovely ladies in their 20s.
No, they weren't like down in the pit with their clothes all ripped, you know, being harassed by Vincent Chiavelli.
But yeah, I think I did comment on how she's just there in every scene. She's just throwing herself, you know, at the large amount of sausage in front of her. But, you know, it's just, I don't know, the whole movie just seemed very 80s to me. And as you, JR, were talking about your memory of watching it over and over and over again, it reminded me kind of how I was with Howard the Duck. And I don't know, this movie,
oh, yes.
I'm going to make a lot of enemies, but this movie is right up there with Howard the Duck for me.
Hey, I actually saw Howard the Duck in the theater.
Yeah, I did too with my cousin. And then, you know, on HBO. I mean, I love that movie. I remember just finding it to be super fun and silly.
You know, I'm going to digress into Howard the Duck here for a minute. Howard the Duck is actually a pretty good movie. The biggest problem Howard the Duck had was that it ran out of money.
Oh.
And they shot it chronologically. So like the end is really bad. But they actually did a really good job with the costumes and the sets and everything all the way up until the end. And then it just all kind of falls apart. The special effects are really bad at the end. They just totally ran out of money. It was way over budget.
Yeah, I thought it was a ridiculous premise, but a fun premise. And, you know, I think Buckaroo Banzai is a ridiculous premise, but also fun. I don't know, it'd be interesting to hear from the other female deadpanites on their take on Buckaroo Banzai, because your views are very, like, masculine and male, and you're like, oh yeah, when I was a little boy, this was awesome. You know, there's not much in this movie for a girl to grab onto other than, you know, staring at Perfect Tommy the whole time. You know, that's kind of it.
He didn't wear a shirt.
So what's that?
He didn't wear a shirt, which I probably wouldn't wear a shirt either, or ever.
Yeah, although, you know, he often did. He had, like, that plaid suit, though. That was not so perfect, I guess, really. But I digress. Sorry, so go on, Jerry. You had a point.
I was going to say, one of the things I remember watching the movie, even watching it recently, even though Ellen Barkin was in it as the cheesecake, for me, that had no importance in the movie whatsoever. I mean, she could have not been there, and I still would have enjoyed the movie.
Yeah.
Right. Again, a male point of view. You know, this movie is totally for guys. There's nothing for a girl to say, what can I get away from this movie? You know, take away from this movie.
Ooh, look, a strong female protagonist who has to get saved by the strong male protagonist who's perfect in every possible way.
And she was kind of suicidal. You know, yeah. She wasn't really that strong.
I meant that as facetiously as possible. Okay. She was possibly the worst female role model of any movie I've ever seen, because she just falls apart every possible chance.
And realistically, for the story, when she shows up, the story slows down.
Yes.
It just it starts crawling whenever she's in it. It's like, can we just cut all the scenes with her and get back to the cool stuff?
And that's why I think her parts weren't that important to me. Like I said, she could have not been in the movie at all. I would have been fine with it.
I actually would have liked more Dr. Lizardo. I mean, although you couldn't understand a word he said 90% of the time, but right. I still, you know, he's just... I think the movie actually does the opposite. I think it really, every time he's on the screen, John Lithgow's on the screen, the movie just takes another turn to the weird, and it really, it kicks up a notch. I think, you know, you're suddenly paying a little bit more attention.
I think one thing that I noticed watching it recently again versus watching it many, many times in the 80s is how many of these people have gone on to be really huge actors that you see everywhere. And it's like they were all famous in their own way at the time. Like Christopher Lloyd had he done Back to the Future at that point?
No, but he was on Taxi.
Yeah, he had been in Taxi before that.
Yeah, okay, so this was – but I mean a lot of these guys were already stars, and it was almost like an ensemble cast. But then so many of them went on to actually have these huge careers afterwards. And you go back and watch and go, oh, my God, I totally forgot Jeff Goldblum was in this movie wearing a cowboy outfit.
And, of course, you know, my favorite one that not many people seem to comment about is Yakov Smirnoff. I mean, how fantastic to have him there. He was like the – I don't know if you remember what his role was, but he, you know, was the liaison to the president. Or he had some kind of role – reporting directly to the U.S. president.
The only report about Russian activity, which is funny in itself. Yakov Smirnoff pointing out everything Russia.
Well, and I had just gotten done mainlining 4.5 seasons of Breaking Bad when I watched it. And there's Mike from Breaking Bad as the orderly playing pretty much the same role as Mike from Breaking Bad.
Pretty much typecast.
Yes. All those years ago, still playing the same character, just with more hair.
Right. If that orderly survived, right, then that would be Mike, you know, years later, retired, semi-retired in New Mexico.
Yeah, it could be the same guy. It really could.
Yeah, I thank you for bringing that up. I had mentioned that on the comments page. Yeah, there is a little treat in there for Breaking Bad fans. There's Mike. And, of course, I guess now you could say a treat for Dexter fans, you know, and having John Lithgow.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I watch with my kids. I don't know. I actually had the audio in the very first episode, and they were not really all that impressed. I mean, I think it might have been the crappy special effects, because, you know, that's important. You know, we're at the age where we can digest that. We can say, okay, that spaceship looks ridiculous, but, you know, who cares? It's fun. You know, we love Evil Dead, so we don't care about corny special effects. But, you know, kids, not they have a harder time with that. And also, as you said, and the movie has these points where it just grinds to a weird pastel 80s halt.
Yeah, that music scene was rough. Man, that was weird and rough. And I think that's the point when I realized this really could be a Nickelodeon movie. just cast all these adults as 15 to 17 year olds. Put one of those boy bands as the band, as the main group of Buckaroo and the Hong Kong Cavaliers. And just having seen a few of these shows, these movies on Nickelodeon, I mean, it really would fit. It really would. I know there's people probably going to throw things at me for saying that, but no, I'm going to stick by that one.
This is Ed from Texas. Fry up your brains on Jack Mangan's Deadpan.
But, you know, see, that actually brings up, that kind of touches on something else I wanted to bring up, is, you know, I would have zero interest in that if they said, like, hey, you know, the Jonas Brothers are in the new Buckaroo Banzai reimagining. But aside from that, if someone were to resurrect the franchise, I would be there.
But would your kids like it then?
Well, the Jonas Brothers is a terrible example.
Well, yeah, but
yeah, if it was like maybe if it was more geared towards young kids, if it was more like a Nickelodeon kind of zany thing like that, then yeah, I think they would be interested in going to see it. But I, you know, and I don't know. It probably won't ever be resurrected. It's one of those things like Repo Man. Like there's been a sequel in the works for 30 years that's never going to happen. Or did Repo Girl ever come out? Regardless.
But somebody, you know, did have to go and remake Death Race 2000. So you never know.
And I will say that I enjoyed the original Death Race 2000. And Death Race, they did an okay job with it. It had hints going back to the original. But when I look at stuff like Judge Dredd and Dredd, please, dreadful. When I look at Total Recall and Recall, you just want to yell stop.
Yeah.
if they were to remake Buckaroo Banzai, I think I would have an absolute fit. Because in my mind, it was perfect as it was. There was no reason to go through and destroy what they... I don't think they could recapture what they did. I really don't. And it would cost way too much money to get the stars that they would need to redo it.
Well, yeah, it would have to either be a... you couldn't do the sequel. I mean, it's too late to do Buckaroo Banzai versus the World Crime League. You know, Peter Weller's getting up there. It would have to be a reimagining. Yeah, or a reboot, I guess.
Yep, and like I said, I just don't know if they could do that right or do it justice without really basically gearing it more, like Tony said, more towards kids. And I have to wonder, if I had been 40 in the 80s, would I have enjoyed the movie as much as I did? Because I enjoyed it, and I was 15, 16 years old when it came out, and I loved it. But would I enjoy it if I had seen it for the first time today?
I'm going to say, actually, in the 80s, we wouldn't have seen the Huey Lewis scene and said, holy crap, why are they dancing like that? What's going on? You know, in the 80s, we would have said, okay, you know.
It was contemporary. I mean,
right.
the movie was contemporary for what they were doing at the time, but it was still odd. It wasn't mainstream.
No, absolutely not.
And I would have to say that I probably would not have cared for it. Because it was also focused, even the mainstream elements of the 80s were focused at a younger generation.
And that's what I think it was, is it was geared towards those Star Trek and Star Wars kids, the Star Wars kids that had watched the, you know, Star Wars in the late 70s, early 80s, and all of a sudden, bam, here's this new sci-fi movie. And it wasn't up to the caliber of Star Wars, but it never intended to be. It intended to be good, campy fun, like your old sci-fi from the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And I think that's what they were trying to recapture, was that for the 80s kids. And I think that's why guys like us glommed onto that movie and went, this is it. This is awesome.
Yeah, I would say this movie was trying to go for the same thing that Indiana Jones was, in that, you know, Indiana Jones was really crafted at doing the modern serial. And this was more they tried to, where Indiana Jones tried to recapture that era of the serial. This said, what if the serial was made with modern sensibilities, modern as of 84?
Right.
Sensibilities,
right.
A modern story, but tell that same kind of over-the-top, serialized story just in a film.
Right, and that's where I'm thinking, like, the original Flash Gordons and all that, they were serialized fiction.
Right.
Set for a younger crowd, and I think that's... If they would have done a sequel to Buckaroo Banzai, I'm confident I would have seen it and watched it over and over just like I did the original. And I almost wish they would have, but I think a lot of the stars went off and started having actual careers after Buckaroo Banzai and would have been too expensive to bring back to do a sequel.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can't go back from RoboCop to Buckaroo Banzai.
No. I don't think he would have been after RoboCop. I don't know.
After RoboCop 2, maybe. But
well, yeah.
Well, yeah, they really started killing him at that point.
But, you know, another thing I wanted to say about, because I think that's an interesting question, is that what would we think if we were kind of ourselves, but back then? I think I can't really say enough good things about the creativity, and it's a really a brilliantly creative concept, the way they work in the Orson Welles War of the Worlds radio hoax. The way they work that in is very clever and really smart, and also just the concept. You know, I just remember as a kid just thinking that is the greatest, most original idea ever, that the aliens are here. They're just hiding in the eighth dimension. That's, you know, I think that would go a long way towards us, you know, as less cynical 80s moviegoers, you know, watching these movies. Of course, we would have been 80s, you know, 40-year-olds in the 80s, so we might have just been so high on cocaine we wouldn't have cared. But
I will say that watching it now versus watching it then, I did find one thing that stood out as a plot hole you could drive a truck through that I didn't catch ever watching it as a kid.
Drive a truck through, he says.
A plot hole you could drive a truck through. The lectoids emitted a chemical that caused humans to hallucinate and see the lectoids as humans. Yet in any photograph or on television, they still looked human.
That's because the chemical was all over in the air. Although, actually, if you wore these certain sunglasses, then you could see the aliens for what they really were.
Yes. But on television, it always got me going, well, these people can't smell the lectoid. So how can they not see them as lectoids and they see them as humid?
How about the plot hole that he didn't know that his wife had a twin sister? How about that one? Because that one was the one that was like, are you kidding me?
I must have completely missed that one on the rewatch, too.
Because, although they were separated at birth. I can't blame him defending this movie.
Is there any defense for it? It's one of those you just need to turn something off in the back of your brain and just go for the ride.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
If you think about this too hard at all... It's not a good movie. It's a fun movie. You know, you can enjoy the ride, and it's very creative what they've done, but it's really not a good movie.
I'm going to use an interesting analogy here, in the fact that it's a lot like a song that's really making the rounds right now, that Gungam Style song. The song is absolutely awful. But the little Korean guy can barely sing. The video for it is god-awful and terrible. But you can't stop watching it. it's like candy. You just got to keep eating a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. And next thing you know, you're sitting there and going, no, Gangnam Style. And it's like, wait, why the hell am I singing that song? What's wrong with me?
Yeah, there was a while ago, I got hooked on this. Somebody did... They took clips from the Lord of the Rings and it's like we're going to Isengard, and it's just like it repeats for 10. It literally, it's a YouTube video that you can watch for 10 hours straight. And it's like they've set it to music and everything else. And you just, I don't know, I just get sucked into it. It's just, there's something just kind of hypnotic about it. It's like, it's terrible, but I can't stop listening to this thing.
I guess we're all going to have to go out and look for that, because I actually have not seen that myself.
I have not either.
And I've actually, again, you know, it's nice living under my rock. I've heard of, I'm familiar with your Gangnam style song, but I've not heard it. I've actually managed to avoid it.
Avoid it for as long as you can, because as soon as you watch it, you'll be clapping your hands together and doing the silly dance and going, wait, why am I shaking like this? What happened?
It's like Call Me Maybe, I guess.
Here we go. Oh.
Wow, that's like on demand.
This. Okay, I have to stop it now. But it keeps going, and there's like clips with Gollum in there.
Video. That's the Isengard one. That's the Lord of the Rings parody.
It's taking the Hobbits to Isengard 10 hours. You can look that up on YouTube.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
So I thought that was Gangnam Style.
This is taking the Hobbits to Isengard. And they have clipped it together in such a way that it will literally play for 10 hours.
That's funny.
Yeah, I think that breaks the internet.
Yeah. The wonderful and terrible thing about it is the YouTube link to it has 1.5 million views.
Egad.
Oh.
I think we've officially strayed, gentlemen and lady. So I think I'm going to request your final thoughts on The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. I don't know why I say the whole fucking title all the way through every time. Buckaroo Banzai. What are your final thoughts? I guess we'll start with Desert Pixie.
I think at the next desert deadpan meetup, we should all go to the nearest canal and walk in a box. That's what I want. That's what I want.
Yes.
That's what I'm taking away.
It will be done.
Yes, and there needs to be video of that.
Yeah.
Yes.
For sure.
Absolutely.
I second what Pixie said. I really have nothing else to add. I think I have said everything I'm going to say.
I think next time we have this all get together, we need to have more talking from Desert Pixie. we kept running you down and talking over you, and I apologize.
No, it's all good.
It's kind of like the movie.
The woman just gets walked all over. Where's my gun? Where's my handgun? Man,
to the pit.
Just sit there and cry. You'll be rescued.
This recording session is so meta.
That's right.
In every scene, I'll wear a different colored nightie.
There you go.
There you go. All right. I think I'm going to get rid of you guys then.
I don't blame you.
Well, you know, thank you guys. This has actually been a blast. You know, it's too bad we're getting near the end. So we should do something like this again before the end.
And you know what? Even after it's over, Backseat Producers are still going. So you guys are welcome to come on and chat some there too. And I just may co-opt the audio for this and use it. So
there you go. Yep. You can skip a week of recording.
Yeah. Probably the week after Sausage Fest, because normally I can't speak for a good 3 or 4 days after that.
It's the unspeakable Sausage Fest.
Mm.
So yeah,
is that because it's a mouthful of sausage? Sure.
Well, last year we did have to enact the morality clause, in which we couldn't speak of things that happened.
Oh, the Fight Club cause.
Yeah.
Clause.
Yep.
It's like Las Vegas.
Yeah.
What happens inside the sausage stays inside the sausage.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's so many things that can be said there that I'm just going to completely avoid.
So ponder that as you descend into madness. And I'll wrap up and say thank you very much to J.R. Murdock, who is an author prolific, who is out there on the interwebs and has got many, many things. And take a minute to pimp if you want there, JR.
You can find me on jrmurdoch.com. I'm currently podcasting on the Action Pack podcast. We're putting out serialized audio fiction once a month, and that's with Scott Roche and Mike Plested and myself. We have a steampunk story that I'm writing. We have a superhero story that Scott is writing and a zombie apocalypse story that Mike is writing. And other than that, I'm pretty much just got my head down, bashing out words as fast as I can, hoping to get some other content out there, hopefully early next year.
Excellent. And Tony Mass, of course, everyone knows, but, you know, Tony, you should still pimp.
Oh, let's see. There's Backseat Producers, which, yeah, we've been going for a while now with that. And the thing about the content there is they keep making movies, so we'll probably still be doing this for a while. Which is our little take on fantasy football, except it's not football, it's the box office. You get to give your picks every week, and we do the scoring for you and tell you how you did. We even have a leaderboard, and at the end of every season, there are prizes. We do two seasons a year, and the cool thing is, as of about 2 weeks from now, the current season ends, so it's a great time to jump on and get started for the next season, which is Oscar season, so it's a little more brutal. There's a tougher run at the Oscar season than the summer movie season. We just started Backseat Book Club, the first episode of which will drop in about 5 days from when this is being recorded. And we have also on the site Backseat Quickies, which is Backseat Producers, but in 5 to 10 minute chunks. We also encourage people, if you have a passion about a movie you want to talk about, if you have just recently seen something you want to talk about it, you can record your thoughts, and we will host them on Backseat Quickies.
Excellent. Well, you know, thank you again. And hopefully we'll hear this on both the Deadpan and, you know, whatever you can salvage of it on Backseat Producers. But thanks again, gentlemen and lady. It's been a great pleasure, and we will definitely do the canal walk sometime.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jeff.
Definitely.
Thanks, guys.
All right. I will I'll do my snappy thing just so. There.
Snappy Jeff.
Snap.
I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording.
Why are they dancing like that? What's going on? You know, in the 80s, we would have said, okay, you know.
It was contemporary.